Chapter 44. Kara, sitting on her heels beside him, laid a hand compassionately on Richard's shoulder as he bent over Nicky. He felt dead himself. He wrapped Nicky protectively in his arms, unable to offer her any real protection, any salvation, unable to offer her redemption from Jagang's claim on her life. The totality of the events that had carried him to that point in his life seemed to overwhelm him. No matter what he did, the believers in the Imperial Order advanced their cause steadily onward. In their fanaticism, they were determined to wipe all joy from life, to squeeze any meaning from it, to curdle existence itself into unbearable misery. Devoted to their mindless faith in a perfect, eternal afterlife gained through sacrifice of this life, the followers of the Order lusted to see to it that everyone who dared to want to exist for the sake of this life alone was made to suffer immeasurably for that singular, intolerable, sinful desire. Richard hated them. He hated them passionately for all the harm they inflicted on others. He wished he could wipe them all from the world of life. Nicky, despite being largely unresponsive, tightened an arm around his neck, as if to comfort him in his grief, as if to tell him that it was all right, that she too, like so many all around who had fought and died to defend their way of life, the right of their loved ones to live safe from violence brought against them for simply desiring to live free, would soon be at eternal peace beyond the reach of pain. Even though he knew that she would at last be free of terrible suffering and out of Jagang's reach, Richard couldn't bear the thought of her leaving the world of life. At that moment, everything seemed futile to Richard. Everything good in life was being methodically destroyed by people who fervently believed that their pious purpose in life was to murder those who would not bow down and submit to the Order's beliefs. The world was in the grip of utter madness. So many had already died. So many more would die. Richard felt as if he were caught in a whirlpool, forever being sucked down into the depths of despair. There seemed no end to the senseless slaughter, no escape from it but death. And now Nicky was taking that final journey. He had just wanted to live his life with the woman he loved, the same as so many others. Instead, Kaelin's mind had been stolen from her, leaving her a tool of those with a burning desire to either impose their beliefs on everyone or to destroy them all. While he might have helped Kaelin get away for the moment, Jagang's minions would be hunting her. None of them would ever give up. Unless they were stopped, the Order would have Kaelin, just as it would have everyone. Now Nicky was being slowly drained of her life as well. As Richard turned inward, turned away from everyone and everything, he felt a sudden, violent, wrenching jolt within. For a moment, it held him gripped in a strange and silent netherworld before tumbling him once again into an inner storm. He didn't know the source of the inner disorientation, but it suddenly felt as if he had become lost among a million meteors. And then they all exploded outward from somewhere within the unfathomable depths of his being. Kara grabbed his arm and shook him. "Lord Rawl! What's wrong? Lord Rawl!" He realized that he was screaming. He couldn't stop himself. Amid the incandescence, understanding overcame him. He suddenly knew, without a doubt, the cause of the sensation. It was an awakening. The glorious power of that rebirth was staggering. Every fiber of his being was suddenly on fire with the life of it. At the same time, the marrow of every bone rang out in pain so monumental that it nearly rendered him senseless. He could feel his birthright burning again within, feel himself whole again for the first time in what seemed forever. It was almost as if he had forgotten who he was, what he was. As if he'd lost his way, and it had all suddenly returned in one blinding instant. His gift had returned. He had no idea why or how, but it had returned. The thing that kept him conscious, though, kept his mind focused, was his seething rage at those who, through the self-justification of their own twisted beliefs, harmed others who didn't think as they did. And that moment, as his blinding rage at all those who existed to hate and hurt others again flowed through that integral connection with his gift, he heard a metallic pop. Nicky gasped. Richard, almost unaware of what was happening, realized that her arms were around him, and she was gasping to catch her breath. "Lord Rawl," Kara said, shaking him. "Look! The collar came off! And the gold ring that was in her lip is gone!" Richard backed away to peer down into Nikki's blue eyes. She was staring up at him. The Radahan had burst apart and was lying broken behind her neck. "Your gift is back," Nikki whispered, barely conscious. "I can sense it." He knew without doubt that it was true. His gift had inexplicably returned. He noticed a forest of legs as he glanced around. Men of the first file, weapons to hand, had surrounded him. Ulic and Egan stood between them and Richard. Between Ulic and Egan was a wall of red leather. Richard realized that when the burning pain of it had exploded through him, he had screamed. They had probably thought he was being murdered. "Richard," Nicky said, drawing his attention. Her voice was little more than a weak whisper. "Are you out of your mind?" She had to force her eyes open several times. Her brow was beaded with sweat. Richard knew that she was spent from the ordeal and needed time to rest if she was to fully recover. Still, it was profoundly heartening to see the life in her eyes again. "What do you mean? Why in the world would you paint those symbols in red all over yourself?" Kara glanced over at him. "I like the look." Boudin nodded from above. "Me too. Kind of reminds me of our red leather, but without the leather." "It's a good look for him," Nida agreed. Even through her exhaustion, Nikki's expression revealed that she was not amused. "Where did you ever learn to do that? Do you have any idea of the danger those symbols represent?" Richard shrugged. "Of course, why do you think I painted them?" Nikki sagged back, looking too weak to argue. "Listen to me," she said. Listen, you can't tell Kaelin about the two of you." Richard frowned as he leaned close, trying to hear her clearly. "What are you talking about?" "It needs a sterile field. If anything happens to me, if I don't make it, you need to know. You can't tell her about the two of you. If you tell Kaelin about her past with you, it won't work."
"What won't work?"
"Orden. If you ever get the chance to invoke the power of Orden, it needs a sterile field to work. That means that Kaelin can't have foreknowledge about the love between the two of you, or the memories can't be rebuilt. If you tell her, she will be forever lost to you." Richard nodded, not sure of what she was talking about, but greatly concerned nonetheless. He feared that Nikki might be delirious from the ordeal of the collar. She wasn't really making any sense, but he knew that it was not the time or place to get into it. He needed her fully recovered and thinking clearly first.
"Are you listening?"
she asked, her eyes sliding closed as she struggled to remain conscious. Richard wasn't sure if he had actually gotten the collar off in time. He knew that, at the least, she was not yet herself. "Yes, all right, I'm listening. Sterile field. Got it. Now, just relax until we can get you to a place where you can rest. Then you can explain it all to me.
You're safe now."
Richard stood as Kara and Boudin helped Nikki up. "She needs a quiet place where she can rest," he told them. Boudin put an arm around Nikki's waist.
"I'll see to it, Lord Rawl."
It had been quite a while since he'd heard himself referred to as Lord Rawl. The thought struck him that Nathan might be a little resentful of suddenly being displaced as the Lord Rawl. This had not been the first time that he'd been pressed into service as the Lord Rawl, protector of the bond, only to have Richard return to reclaim the title. Before he could really think about it, he heard an odd noise. It sounded like something crackling, possibly burning, followed by a thump. As the men around him parted to let Richard and Nikki through, he saw a man moving toward them. At second glance, Richard wasn't sure of what he was seeing. It seemed like a soldier of the first file, but then again it didn't. The uniform looked somehow indistinct. General Trimack, concerned with helping Richard, extended an arm, easing some of his men back out of the way to let Richard get past. Richard, though, had paused. He was looking at the soldier not too far away, making his way through the carnage. The man didn't have a face. The first thought that struck him was that maybe the man had been horribly burned, that his face had been melted away. But his uniform was intact, and his skin didn't look at all burned or blistered. Instead, it was smooth and healthy-looking. He also didn't walk as if he were hurt. But he didn't have a face. Where there should have been eyes, there were only slight depressions in the smooth skin, and above them the hint of a brow ridge. Where there should have been a nose, there was only a slight vertical rise, a mere indication of a nose. There was no mouth. He looked as if his face was made of clay, but hadn't yet been sculpted into features. His hands, too, were unfinished. He had no individual fingers, only thumbs. The hands looked more like flesh mittens. It was so startling a sight that it was instantly terrifying to behold. A soldier of the first file, helping an injured man and seeing only the semblance of a first file uniform approaching from behind and the side, straightened. He turned a little, lifting an arm out as if to ask the man in his peripheral vision to stay back. The faceless man reached up and touched the soldier's arm. The soldier's face and hands blackened and cracked, as if intense heat had instantaneously crisped his flesh to a blackened crust. He never even had time to cry out before he'd been charred beyond recognition. He fell, landing with a thump, the noise Richard had heard only a moment before. The faceless man had taken on a more distinct appearance. His nose had gained definition. He now had the indication of a slit for a mouth. It was as if he had drawn the features out of the life he had just taken. In an instant, other soldiers of the first file stepped in front of the approaching threat. The faceless man touched them as he walked through their defensive line. Their faces, too, instantly crinkled into black, burnt folds that no longer even looked human, and they crumbled lifeless to the ground. "Beast," Nikki said from right beside Richard. He was helping to hold her up. Her arm was around his shoulder. "Beast," she whispered again, a little louder, in case he hadn't heard her the first time. "Your gift is back. The beast can find you." General Trimack was already leading a half-dozen men toward the new threat. That threat continued to walk toward Richard, unconcerned by the men rushing to meet it. General Trimack bellowed with the exertion of a mighty swing as he brought his sword whistling down on the advancing threat. The man made no effort to evade the blow. The sword sliced down a good foot into the shoulder, right beside the neck, nearly cleaving the shoulder off the body. It was a wound that would have stopped anyone. Anyone alive. The general, his hands still on the sword, in an instant decomposed into crumpled, charred, cracked, and bleeding flesh that started sloughing away. General Trimack collapsed to the floor without so much as a wince or a cry. Other than his uniform, the body was unrecognizable. The faceless man, the general's sword still cleaved deeply into his body, never missed a stride. His face had gained yet more definition. Now there were rudimentary eyes peering out from the depressions. Along the side of the face, a hint of a scar had appeared, similar to the one General Trimack had. The blade of the sword, where it stuck from the man, began to smoke as it turned white hot as if freshly pulled from a blacksmith's forge. Then both ends sagged as it melted in two, falling away from where it had been embedded in the man's chest. The point of the sword, behind the back, clattered to the floor, while the hilt end fell and bounced once, landing hissing and smoking on a nearby body. Men rushed in from every direction to stop the approaching threat. "Get back!" Richard yelled. "All of you, get back!" One of the moored Sith slammed her aegil into the base of the man's neck. She instantly sizzled and smoked into a blackened, charred corpse and toppled back. What had been only the indication of hair on the beast refined into blonde strands, as hers had been only an instant before. Everyone at last skidded to a stop, and then started backing away, trying to confine the threat while at the same time staying out of reach. Richard seized a crossbow from a nearby soldier of the first file. The weapon was already armed with one of the deadly red-fletched arrows that Nathan had found for them. As the man with the evolving face stepped purposefully toward him, Richard raised the bow and pulled the release. A red-fletched bolt slammed into the center of the chest. The man, the beast, halted. Its smooth skin began to blacken and crisp, just like the men it had touched. The knees folded, and the beast went down in a smoking heap, looking for all the world the same as the men it had killed. Unlike the others, though, it continued to smolder. No flames erupted, but the whole thing, including the uniform that Richard could now see, was not actually a uniform of cloth, leather, and armor, but actually a part of the beast itself, melted and bubbled. The dissolving mass began to coagulate into a blackened mass. As everyone stood stunned, watching, it burned without flame, drying and cracking and curling until only ashes were left. "You used your gift," Nikki said, her head hanging. "It found you." Richard nodded to no one in particular. "Verdine, please get Nikki to somewhere where she can get some rest." Richard hoped that she could recover, that she would be all right. He didn't just care about her, he needed her. Addie had said that Nikki was his only hope.